it does is not for us to miss. Did we save our dancing days for this? The final chance to clear the dust is not for us to miss. Did we save?
WMFO, Medford. Okay, seem to be experiencing some technical difficulties here with my backing music. So, unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, I'm going to start things off with a yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The Big Scoop Matter had an original air date of the 11th of November, 1956. And this stars Bob Bailey as yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Thanks. This is Arthur, the Grand Hour. Thanks for listening, for tuning in this early. Sorry about my technical difficulties here with the DJ station. I'll see if I can remedy that while you're listening to this fine drama.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Joe McNabb, Northeast Indemnity, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Joe. What's up?
At the moment, my blood pressure.
Too much work?
No. Prospect of having to pay off on a $100,000 life insurance policy.
Uh-oh.
Fella, I think you know, Johnny. Art Wesley.
Oh, sure. Been a pal of mine for years. Reporter.
Yeah. Apparently, he's working on a story right now that somebody doesn't want him to report.
What do you mean?
Night before last, he got beat up in an alley. Yesterday, a car made a pass at him at high speed.
What about today?
It's early yet, Johnny.
Oh, yeah, sure. But let's hope it's not too late.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Northeast Indemnity Affiliates, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Big Scoop matter. Expense account item one, $18.40, transportation and incidentals to New York City. I called Art Wesley's paper. He wasn't in and nobody seemed to know where he was. Then I remembered a small bar called Tony's over on 3rd Avenue. I took a cab, that's item two, $1.25, and found him in a corner booth.
Sorry, Johnny, no bodyguard. The informants I'm working with will take off fast if they spotted one. No informants, no story.
That insurance policy your paper took out on you. Who's the beneficiary?
A dear departed wife, Joan.
Departed? I thought...
We split up a couple of months ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Art.
We were living in two different worlds. I wanted a home and family. She wanted a trip to the moon every night.
Where is she now?
Who knows? On her way to the moon, I guess.
Hey, look, this story you're working on, Art.
It's hot, Johnny. And big, real big. A national gambling syndicate. And run by a guy right here in New York.
Who?
I'm getting close, but I'm not sure yet. When I am, then out come my articles.
What's this guy gonna do when you push him into a corner? Look, I'm worried about you.
You look, Johnny, I'm not as foolish as you think. I've got his name written down and put in a safe deposit box with what evidence I got. That's my real insurance.
Oh, Art, look, we've been friends a long time. I'm not gonna let you do this alone.
Sorry, Johnny. I gotta go it alone.
Since I'd gotten nowhere with Art, I decided to try his wife, Joan, even though they were separated. I found her in an apartment on East 68th, but she was hardly what you'd call cooperative.
Look, Mr. Dollar, so you're a friend of Art's. At the moment, I'm not.
Mrs. Wesley, your marriage with Art is none of my business. But that insurance policy his paper took out on him is. And incidentally, you're still the beneficiary.
So?
So he could be in danger, those articles he's writing.
Why doesn't he drop it?
Oh, look, you know Art better than that.
Then what am I supposed to do about it? That story is his business. How I feel about things is my business. And come to think of it, I can't see that either of those things is your business.
Item 3, $1.80 cab fare to police headquarters in the office of my old friend, Detective Lieutenant Rastelli.
Sure, I know about those attempts on Art's life. So I talked to him and got nowhere.
He told me the stories about a national gambling syndicate.
It's more than he told me.
Supposedly the big boss is here in New York. Now, what are you going to do about it?
Look, the minute Art quits thinking he's got to hit the jackpot all by himself and lets us in on it, we'll give him all the protection he... Lieutenant Rastelli. Yeah, just a minute. It's for you, Johnny.
Oh, thanks. Hello?
Art Wesley, Johnny. They told me at your hotel where to reach you.
Anything new, Art?
I'm leaving town for a few hours. This could be it, Johnny. Tonight could be the jackpot.
Well, listen, let me go with you.
Sorry, I gotta go alone. It's part of the deal.
Art, it could be a trap.
I can take care of myself. Call you when I get back. Wish me luck.
Well, look, wait. Art! Art! Item 4, $1.80 cab to Art's apartment, where I persuaded the manager to let me in. I was looking for anything that would give me a lead. Then, near the phone, on a scratch pad, I found where he'd written the word Watika several times. Sure, Lake Watika, upstate. Art had a lodge there. Item 5, $25 even for a rented car. It was a 3-hour drive to Lake Watika, which was bad enough. But to top it off, it started to rain, and rain hard. When I finally got to the highway turnoff, the side road to the lake was a mass of mud. Then I got two quick breaks. It stopped raining, and I spotted the 6-mile road into Art's place. Half an hour further on, I saw a light. Art's car was parked at one side, and the front door of the lodge was wide open. When I got to it, I saw why. Art was lying in the doorway. Yeah. He was the one who wanted to hit the jackpot. But you can't hit the jackpot with a slug, particularly when that slug is right between your eyes. I drove to the sheriff's office and reported it. Sheriff Tompkins and his boys took over. But in the darkness and the mud, they could only make a routine check. He asked me to meet him at the lodge the next morning, so I did.
Buddy was right here in the doorway, huh, son?
Yeah, Sheriff, I didn't move it.
And Wesley probably got shot when he answered the door by somebody standing out there on the ground.
Because of that bullet hole in the roof?
Yeah. Right over that shelf that's stocked with canned goods, sugar, salt, and the like. Apparently, he used this place regular.
Yeah, he used to do some of his writing here. Were you able to determine time of death?
Coroner says between 10:30 and 11 last night. What time did you arrive?
About half an hour after the rain stopped. I'd say 11:45.
Means it was still raining a good half hour after the killing. No wonder we found no tracks.
Hey, look, Sheriff. Art was working on a hot story about a national gambling syndicate. Could be that he found out who the boss was last night, the hard way.
Oh? Then you think the killer was from out of town? Maybe New York?
Yeah. Now, where would he stay? Is there a hotel around here?
Lake Watika Inn? Just outside the village, about 6 miles from here.
Sheriff, I'll check it out.
The guests here at the inn, Mr. Dollar? Well, we have only two who checked in yesterday. It's the off-season, of course.
Yeah, clerk, who are they?
Well, Mr. Cooper yesterday afternoon and a Mr. Buckley around dark.
Uh-huh. Are they still here?
Mr. Cooper is sitting right out there on the terrace, but Mr. Buckley paid in advance and left quite early this morning.
I see. Did Buckley give any reason for stopping here?
He said he was a traveling man and didn't like to drive in the rain.
Okay. I'd like you to write down a description of him. I'll pick it up on the way out.
Oh, I'll be glad to, sir.
Hi.
Oh, good morning.
Enjoying the scenery?
Yes, immensely. Oh, sit down, won't you?
Sure, thanks. My name's Dollar.
Mine's Cooper. You just check in?
I'll just drop by.
I came yesterday.
Uh-huh. Pretty up here this time of year.
Yes. Yes, certainly is. I really enjoy places like this in the off-season. It's a nice change.
Too bad the weather hasn't been better, huh?
Well, the rainstorm last night? Oh, I enjoyed that, too.
You were out in it?
Oh, no. No. No, I enjoyed it the way a storm should be enjoyed. In front of the fireplace in my cottage with a drink and a good book. No, Mr. Dollar, I stayed in last night.
And that was that. I picked up the description of the other guest, Buckley, from the clerk and gave it to Sheriff Tompkins, who got out a bulletin on him. Then I drove back to New York City, turned in my rented car, and took a cab, that's item 6, $1.70, to Joan Wesley's apartment.
Yes. They notified me this morning about Art's death. I don't know what to say. What is there to say?
Good question, Mrs. Wesley.
If only he hadn't been so stubborn. If only he'd given up that story about the gambling syndicate or whatever it was.
Yeah. You figure somebody in the syndicate killed him?
Why, of course.
Mrs. Wesley, did you know Art had gone on up to the lodge at Lake Watika?
No. Mr. Dollar, I'm rather tired.
One more thing. Did you go out last night?
No. It was raining. I stayed here in the apartment.
All evening?
All evening.
I see. Well, thanks, Mrs. Wesley. Maybe I was imagining, but it seemed to me Joan Wesley hesitated just a little before telling me she hadn't been out of her apartment last night. And if she had gone to Lake Watika, I checked the basement garage. Her car was clean. Too clean. Item 7, $5 to the garage attendant for some very interesting information. Joan Wesley had ordered her car washed first thing this morning. Why? Because the wheels were covered with mud from last night.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Better schools mean better citizens, better neighbors, better families. But we can't expect our children to respond, to learn and grow, if we ourselves are indifferent to their school environment. CBS Radio urges that you write to Better Schools, 9 East 40th Street, New York 16, New York, for information about how citizens can spark community action to improve their schools. That address again is Better Schools, 9 East 40th Street, New York 16, New York. Now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Big Scoop Matter.
I tell you, I didn't leave this apartment last night.
Your car says differently, Joan.
Car.
You had it washed today because it was all muddy. And the reason it was muddy was because you had it out in the rain last night.
Look,
another thing. You told me you didn't know Art had gone to the lodge. You hadn't heard from him. But the switchboard operator told me you had a call from him yesterday. Now, why else would he call you except to tell you where he was going? Well, how about it, Joan?
All right. Art did call me yesterday and told me he was going to Lake Watika.
And how about last night?
Yes. I went out, but not to Lake Watika.
Art wouldn't give you a divorce. By killing him, you get your freedom and $100,000.
I didn't kill Art. I didn't go up there last night.
And where did you go?
Might as well know. The reason I wanted a divorce from Art was because I'd found someone else.
Oh?
That's where I went for a few minutes last evening.
Why did you lie about the phone call from Art yesterday?
I don't know. I was confused. I was afraid it would look bad for me if it came out that I knew Art had gone up there.
It doesn't look good for you this way, believe me.
Oh, Johnny, I'm telling the truth.
Who is this fella you're interested in?
I don't see why he
Who is he?
His name is Ted Nash. Will you have to talk to him?
I sure will, and right now. But I was wrong about talking to Ted Nash right now. I called his apartment and got no answer. Item 9, $1.60, cab fare to police headquarters in the office of Detective Lieutenant Restelli.
You figure this guy Nash and Joan Wesley could have killed Art and used a gambling syndicate threat as a cover, huh?
It's a possibility, Lieutenant.
Well, I'll see what I can find out about Nash. How'd you do at Lake Watika?
Two guests checked in the day of the killing. One a man named Buckley. He left early this morning. Sheriff Tompkins has a bulletin out on him.
Who else?
A fellow named Cooper, who apparently likes to go places in the off-season. Nothing to tie him in particularly.
Cooper, huh? We had a rumble some time ago that a guy named Cooper was involved in that gambling syndicate.
What?
Trouble is, we got no proof.
Hey, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Art told me he'd put the name of the man he was after in a safe deposit box. If we could find the key to that box.
How about Art's apartment?
Let's take a look. So we looked, and we found the key tucked away in a desk, but only a number on it. Nothing to tell where it was located. I gave it to Lieutenant Rastelli, and he promised to check every bank in town if necessary. While I went on back to Lake Watika to see if the man named Cooper at the inn was the same one Rastelli told me about. When I got there, after a frantic 3-hour drive, I found him comfortably sitting by the fireplace.
Well, Mr. Dollar, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Cooper, I'm going to get right to the point. You told me you came up here to enjoy the scenery.
Yes, that's right. Why?
The man who was killed last night, Art Wesley. He was trying to expose a national gambling syndicate.
Oh, that's very interesting. So?
So, I know a police detective in New York who thinks you're a member of that syndicate.
Well, now, Mr. Dollar, that's a very serious charge. I presume you have proof. Well? No proof. Well, in that case, I don't think there's any...
Mr. Dollar, long-distance call for you. You can take it on that phone right beside you.
Thanks, clerk. Johnny Dollar.
Rastelli in New York, Johnny.
Hi, Lieutenant. You locate that...
Yeah, the safe deposit box. And in it, we found the name of the man Art Wesley was closing in on. It's Cooper.
Thanks very much. Well, Cooper, you want a proof? We've got it. Evidence that ties you in with the syndicate. Clerk.
Well, now, this is ridiculous,
is
Dollar.
Is it? Let me tell you the facts about this thing.
Is something the matter, Mr. Dollar?
Get Sheriff Tompkins on the phone, clerk. Tell him I've got Art Wesley's killer here.
You mean Mr. Cooper?
Oh, now, wait a minute. Now, look, Dollar. If you'd get your facts straight, you'd drop this silly notion of yours.
What kind of facts, Cooper?
What time was Wesley killed?
Between 10:30 and 11 last night.
But, Mr. Dollar, Mr. Wesley's place is some 6 miles from here.
That's right. Why?
Well, then Mr. Cooper couldn't have killed him.
What do you mean?
Last night, I took a drink to Mr. Cooper's cottage here at the inn.
What time?
Around 20 to 11, and I chatted with him for at least 15 minutes.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, quite sure.
Well, Mr. Dollar, I'll buy you a drink sometime.
Cooper strolled back to the bar with a satisfied smirk on his face. So the one man who had to be Art's killer couldn't have killed him. I collared the clerk again and had him repeat his story in detail.
If you recall, it rained heavily last night, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, yes, I drove through it on my way up here.
Well, I was making the rounds of the inn, checking windows, things like that, when the house phone rang. It was Mr. Cooper calling from his cottage. He wanted a drink.
You say that was at 20 to 11?
Yes, I always jot down the time when I am called away from the desk.
All right, go on, go on.
Well, when I got to Mr. Cooper's cottage, he was sitting in the living room in front of the fire with a book.
Yeah.
We chatted a while, and then when I returned here to the desk, I jotted down the time again. 10:55.
Well, that does it.
What do you mean?
Oh, it's a good 20-minute drive from here to Art Wesley's lodge. If he was killed between 10:30 and 11, and Cooper was here at that time, he couldn't have done it.
Well, I'm sorry, but facts are facts. And, oh, excuse me. Lake Watika Inn. Yes, just a moment. Sheriff Tompkins, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Sheriff.
Thought you ought to know, son. Remember that man Buckley we were looking for?
Yeah, sure, the other guest at the inn.
Yeah, we picked him up. I've been questioning him for an hour.
Any luck?
No, sir. He's just a traveling salesman who stayed at the inn because he didn't want to drive in the rain.
You sure?
Buckley swears he doesn't even know Cooper. Just between you and me, Johnny, I think we got the wrong fella.
No place again. I decided to start all over. Got into my car and drove to Art Wesley's place. Nothing was changed. I remember the trip I'd made the night he was killed, how it rained heavily until about half an hour before I arrived. How I'd found him lying in the open doorway, a bullet hole in his head. Yeah, and the hole in the ceiling over the shelf of provisions, marking the path of the bullet. It was there, so were the provisions. Canned food, mustard, sugar, a package of crackers. There was some... Wait a minute. Sugar. The sugar bowl. I stared at it for a moment. I remembered a couple of things the room clerk at the inn had told me. And suddenly the whole deal slid neatly and quietly into place. I drove back to the inn fast. Cooper's cottage was empty, so I went inside to the bedroom and took a look around. Then I spotted one of the pictures on the wall, a little out of place. I looked behind it. Yeah, just what I expected. Outside, I found Cooper sitting on the terrace in front of the main building. I slid into a chair across from him.
Well, Mr. Dollar, what fantastic crime are you going to accuse me of today?
Cooper, I got a one-track mind, and it's still stuck on murder.
Oh, now look, Dollar, we've been over this before, and personally, I find it quite boring. So much so that it's interfering with my vacation here.
That's too bad.
Yes, it is. So I'm leaving this evening.
I don't think so, Cooper.
Oh, come now.
Art Wesley was trying to expose a figure in a gambling syndicate. You.
Well, that's a matter of conjecture.
You had to stop him for keeps.
Oh, now look, Dollar. The time of Art Wesley's death has been established as between 10:30 and 11 last night.
That's right, between 10:30 and 11 last night.
And I'm sure you remember the room clerk telling you he was with me in my cottage living room from 10:40 to 10:55.
I sure do.
So that I certainly couldn't have killed your friend Wesley 6 miles from here during that time.
Except that Art Wesley wasn't killed at his lodge.
What are you talking about?
You see, I remembered something else the clerk had told me. The night of the killing, it stopped raining a little after 11.
All right, what difference does that make?
All the difference in the world, believe me. Here's what really happened, Cooper. You killed Art Wesley in the bedroom of your cottage here at the inn.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
You immediately called the room clerk over and chatted with him in your living room for about 15 minutes. He didn't know there was a corpse in the next room.
Oh, really?
After he left, you took Wesley's body the 6 miles to his place and planted it in the doorway.
Oh, now, look, Dollar...
Your problem was to make it look like he'd been killed there. Then you remembered. The slug that had killed him hit the wall in your bedroom. That gave you an idea. You figured out the right angle at the lodge and fired a shot upwards from the outside the door. It went through the ceiling at the back.
All right, Dollar, I've had enough of your half-baked theories with no proof whatsoever to back them up.
Correction, Cooper. This time I've got proof. There was a shelf of food under the bullet hole and a bowl of sugar directly under it.
A bowl of... So what?
When sugar gets wet, it gets crusty and it stays that way. But the sugar in that bowl was dry. Now, if the killing was between 10:30 and 11, and it rained heavily until after 11, then some rain would have dropped through the bullet hole into the sugar.
I see.
But, Cooper, the sugar was dry. So the bullet hole was made after the time of the murder, when you planted Wesley's body there. Just a little detail, Cooper, but it nails you. That and, of course, the fact I found the slug that really killed Wesley just a couple of minutes ago.
Oh.
Buried in the wall of your bedroom behind a picture you'd moved slightly to cover it.
Well, Dollar, I may as well tell you that I saw you come out of my cottage a few minutes ago. I figured you knew. So ever since you sat down here, I've been holding a gun on you under the table.
You know, Cooper, I may as well tell you. Ever since I sat down here, I've been holding a gun on you, too.
Wait. You...
Let's have it.
Well, you... You didn't have any gun.
A big-time gambler bluffed right out of the game. Cooper, you're slipping. Item 10-3750, transportation and incidentals back to Hartford. Expense account total $187.40. Remarks? Cooper's awaiting trial. About Art Wesley... Well, I guess that sugar bowl was a dead man's revenge. And come to think of it, that revenge was pretty sweet. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. In days long since gone by, one had to go out in search of derring do. But in a fast-moving world, exciting things are happening right around the clock. Things you can be in on no matter what else you're doing, as long as your radio is nearby. With CBS newsmen on the job, you can make CBS Radio your listening post for world events. Stay tuned now for 5 minutes of CBS News, to be followed over most of these same stations by the FBI in Peace and War. Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, colorful New Orleans, from nightlife in the Latin Quarter to the dismal, deadly swamps. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. Written by Robert Reif, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Russell Thorson, Barney Phillips, Stacey Harris, Larry Thor, Parley Bear, and Les Tremaine. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Coverley speaking.
You lads. Yes, that was yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The Big Scoop Matter. The original air date, the 11th of November, 1956. I believe. Well, yeah, you heard the credits. Bob Bailey, Jack Johnstone producing. And Parley Bear. Parley Bear was a regular in the radio world. He's featured quite frequently with Jack Johnstone on the Six Shooter, which I like to play here on the Grand Hour. Today's Western in the second half is going to be a Gunsmoke. So I think I need to fulfill an FCC obligation. So we'll go ahead and take care of that right now. Thanks.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. Again, if you're just tuning in, my name's Arthur. The program's called The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. I play the radio dramas from the golden age, the newer of radio. I guess Bob Bailey, when he closed out the Big Scoop Matter, introduced a new story for next week. I'm going to probably go ahead and follow this show up next week with the next order, the next show in order with Bob Bailey as Johnny Dollar. But for now, we're going to go with the Western portion of the program, the double feature. This is Gunsmoke. This one is titled Doc Holliday. Not a big fan of trying to introduce real characters into fictitious shows, but Norm Macdonald did a fine job with Gunsmoke and with the radio version as well as the TV version. So I'm going to go ahead and bring that in. Thanks for listening. Yes, heading out. Doc Holliday had an original air date of the 19th of July, 1952.
Around Dodge City and and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke.
West with young America, the story of a man who moved with it, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Hey, all you pretty travelers, you listen to me. You gotta get welcome to Dodge City proper like. Hey, you there, mister. I said you.
Are you addressing me, sir?
I reckon I am. You a preacher?
Not exactly.
You dress like a preacher.
If you'll excuse me.
Back up, fancy pants. You ain't no preacher. I figure I'm making you dance some for the folks.
You think you can hoorah me?
Dude, I said dance. Dance or the next shot will take off one of your toes.
I don't think I'd like that.
Doc, no. All right, Thorne, put up the gun.
Marshal, you got a wild and woolly town here.
Marshal, you move aside. I'm going to make this grinning dude kick up his heels for us.
I'd say that might be quite a trick, Thorne. Unless he's changed a lot since I last met him. Have you, Doc?
Not for the good, Matt.
I was afraid.
You pasty-faced tenderfoot. I said for
you... Shut up, Thorne. He's drunk, Doc.
He's dead. You just don't know it yet.
I'll take it good if you'd meet me later at my office.
All right, Matt. To you.
Well, that's sure a lot of talk. Now I'm going to shoot that dude's boot heels.
Fire one shot and I'll pistol whip you, Thorne.
What's that? You're kind of forgetting who's holding a gun, ain't you?
I wasn't forgetting.
Oh, my wrist. You broke my wrist.
I doubt it. Now let's go to jail.
Oh, you can't put me in jail. I'm Thorne Finley.
Move.
Oh, you wait till I tell Big Jack about this, and I will, too.
Do that. He might be grateful to me for saving your neck. You pulled some fool stunts, Thorne, but you've never been closer to dying than just a minute ago.
Do you mean from that fancy pants? Oh, I could handle six like him.
That makes you a lot of men. I can name a dozen pretty good gun hands who can't handle one of it.
What?
That's Doc Holliday.
Salute, Matt.
Salute, Doc. It sounds worse, Doc.
Yeah, I got orders to go to Arizona. Air's dry there, better for my lungs.
Going?
Thought I might. Wyatt invited me to visit him. He and Virgil and Morgan of the law down there. Some little mining town called Tombstone.
Well, it sounds peaceful anyway.
It isn't, it will be by the time Wyatt Earp gets through. He's the peacemakingest man I ever met outside of you. Matt, who was the tellerhead down at the depot anyway?
Oh, Thorne. He's just a spoiled kid.
Kid? Couldn't be much younger than you.
Sure, but Thorne never grew up. His father has coddled him and protected him and gotten him out of scrapes ever since he was a pup. He's never had to be a man. Not with Big Jack Wet nursing him.
Big Jack? Big Jack Finley?
Oh, you know him?
I've heard of him.
Well, that figures. He owns about half of Kansas. Star in a box runs more cows than he can count.
Swings a lot of weight in Dodge?
Yeah, too much.
Mr. Dillon? Mr. Dillon, somebody said that Doc Holliday had come into town today and he... Oh, excuse me.
It's all right, Chester. Why'd you shake hands with him?
Don't mind if I shake with my left hand. It's kind of habit.
Yeah, I know. Mr. Dillon has the same habit.
He would. How about dinner tonight, Matt?
Sure, sure. How long will you be in Dodge?
Not long. just till I finish a chore.
Oh? Uh-huh. That chore have anything to do with Big Jack Finley?
Might say so. Gonna kill him.
Turn him loose. You forgot to close the door, Mr. Finley.
You're going to turn my boy loose? Well, I'm going to have to do it for you.
You got a writ of habeas corpus?
Writ? Thorn didn't commit no crime.
The charges are drunk and disorderly, disturbing the peace, and attempted assault with a deadly weapon.
I was.
You still need a writ.
But man, Judd Nathan does what I say, and you know it. But you think I can get a writ?
I'm sure you can and will. You always do.
Then what's the point, Dylan? It's just a lot of useless red tape.
It's the law. Close the door on the way out. All right, Thorne.
Didn't I tell you Big Jack would get me out? When are you going to learn you can't
save the speech?
The law can't touch a Finley. You ought to get smart, Marshal.
Like you?
Sure, like me. Hi, Big Jack.
You okay, son?
Fine.
Anything else, Mr. Finley?
Why, yes. My boy here is a little boisterous sometimes, I know. High-spirited, you understand?
Uh-huh. So?
So, I want to put a stop to all this nonsense of yours, arresting him every time he kicks up his heels a bit.
Now, go on.
Well, I'm offering you a job. Let's say, protecting my interests. $200 a month.
And no work, naturally.
I see we understand each other perfectly. No work, of course.
All I have to do is just shut my eyes whenever Junior here breaks the law, huh?
I said we understand each other. There's no need to elaborate on it, Dylan.
There's a big need. Only how do I explain to a person like you that some men don't wear a price tag?
Huh?
How do I explain how I feel about a so-called respectable citizen making the law his private doormat?
Hey, you're nothing but the stupid gunman I've always thought you were. I understand you took the part of Doc Holliday against my son.
I kept Thorne from committing suicide, yeah.
You sided with a notorious killer against an important citizen of this community. Now I'm telling you, Dylan. Holliday. I don't want him in Dodge tomorrow.
Doc may be a gunfighter, but he's clear with the law, Finley, and a better man than your son will ever be.
What? Why, I...
That hurts, doesn't it?
You... I'm serving notice, Marshal. You run that killer out of Dodge City... or I'll do it myself.
Big Jack Finley, cattleman and self-made king of southern Kansas. No better or worse than most of the men carving empires out of the West. Until love for his son blinded him to the fact that Thorne Finley had gone bad. And from here on, I knew the war was on between Big Jack and me.
So Big Jack Finley's gonna run me out of town, huh?
Yeah. Unless I do it first.
Oh? I do something naughty, Matt?
Well, you threaten a man's life.
That. And just between friends, Matt.
Anything else, Doc? Not murder.
Murder? I can give him an even break.
With you, that's still murder. Don't you think you better tell me about it?
Mm-hmm. What if I don't tell you?
Yeah, then my job's to warn Finley and try to protect him.
You're a tough man to be friends with, Matt.
It applies to you, too, doesn't it?
Guess maybe it does at that. Didn't realize I put you on the spot by spouting off my good intentions. Sorry.
Yeah, forget it, forget it. You want to talk to me?
All right. Remember a girl named Ruth Davis?
Mm-hmm. Died in a riding accident a few months ago. Always wondered if it wasn't suicide. She lost her brother 2 weeks before that.
No accident. No suicide.
You sure?
Sure. You know, Ruth and her brother ran a ranch alone.
Mm-hmm.
A man started pestering Ruth and she hated him. The brother kicked the man off the ranch. This fella dragged Gulch Ruth's brother, made it look like a robbery.
You have any proof of this?
Yeah. Ruth was afraid to go to the law, so she sent a letter to me. Here, read it yourself. She says the man was Finley and says she expects him to try and shut her up for good.
Well, that doesn't mean it's Big Jack.
I went to see Ruth's folks. They had her belongings. Among them, I found this.
Watch chain.
Engraved JF on the clasp. Jack Finley. You see why I've got to kill him, Matt? He forced Ruth's horse over that cliff, sure. But do you still think she died accidental?
No. But who's responsible is something for a court to decide.
Court? With Finley's money and influence, he wouldn't spend 5 days in jail even if he was convicted, which he wouldn't be.
He doesn't own the court.
Maybe not, but it's still the most powerful man in the state against a dead girl whose only friend is Doc Holliday. How do you think a judge will decide?
Doc, I'm going to ask you a favor.
Make it one I can give.
I got an idea, but you must let me handle it my way. Give the law a chance.
All right, Matt, I can wait.
Thank you. Now, I'll keep this letter in chain for a while.
All right, but if the law fails, I'll brace Big Jack Finley when he walks out of the courthouse.
And you'll be bracing two men, Doc. Finley and me.
Like it'll be a fine day.
Well, you're up kind of early just to bring me a weather report, aren't you, Judge Nathan?
Huh? Oh, well, I want to see you.
Now, go right ahead. You mind if I finish shaving?
No, no, please do. Just thought I'd chat with you about the...
About the Finleys?
Yes. It seems that Big Jack's very upset by your attitude.
I'm not surprised.
Feels you're a little rough on his boy.
I am.
But then his boy's a little rough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, perhaps Thorne is high-spirited, like yesterday.
Yesterday he was just plain high. Tell me, Judge Nathan, how do you like being on Finley's payroll?
What?
You know, you used to be a pretty decent person.
Oh, you can't talk to me like...
Yes, I can. I'm sending a copy of Thorne's record to the governor.
Governor?
And with it, I'm sending a list of the writs you've issued to get him out of jail and a copy of the court records.
I've only tempered my justice with mercy, that's all.
Thorne's been arrested for 18 offenses, convicted of 10, spent no time in jail, and paid a total of $15 in fines. I'd say you've been very merciful.
You said you were sending this to the governor. You haven't actually mailed it yet?
No. You got an op.
Not that I don't feel justified in any decisions I've made, but such a report might cause undue talk at the Capitol.
And ruin your political hopes. Well, my conditions are simple. Get off Finley's payroll now.
Very well.
And give me cooperation from here on, no matter who's involved. Do that and I shelve the report.
I'll do it.
Mr. Dillon, trouble's a-making.
What kind of trouble, Chester?
It's Big Jack Finley, Mr. Dillon. He's rounding up his crew at the Alfraganza. They're going to ride Doc Holliday out of town on a rail. Did you cut yourself shaving?
Return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment. But first, don't forget, starting Monday, CBS Radio's tremendous news staff will start bringing you the complete coverage of the Democratic Convention in Chicago. As you found during the Republican Convention, CBS Radio never misses. So starting Monday, stay with CBS Radio all day and evening for the Democratic Convention. Now, the second act of Gunsmoke.
Thank you.
Doc. It's Matt.
Oh.
What's up? Trouble. Lots of trouble. Big Jack Finley's organizing a little citizens' committee of his own hand-picked men coming to escort you out of town.
On a rail?
Yeah, that's the general idea. Here, take a shotgun.
Yeah, I'll hide it under the covers, modest-like.
There. I'll wait against the wall here.
Good. That'll put him in a crossfire.
If it comes to that.
There's enough of them, we're in a spot.
Yeah, likely we are.
You're risking your neck to save me some bruises. One I owe you, friend Matt.
It's my job.
Still one I owe you.
There he is. Wrap him up.
All right, stop right there. I'll shoot the man who takes another step.
You think you're going to stop us, Dylan?
I think so. Me and Doc.
Doc.
Show him, Doc.
Sure thing, Marshal. Look, boys, surprise. I sure do love surprises.
Dylan, I've got a dozen men with me.
Well, sure, about six of them will die, Finley, if you don't crawl out of here fast.
And guess who'll die first, Big Jack?
You there, Moncrief. I always figured you for some brains. Get your boss out of here, quick.
Sure talking sense, Big Jack.
Shut up, Moncrief. You showing yellow.
Oh, but man, there's nothing here for us to die over.
Listen to him, Finley. That greener Doc is holding has 18 buckshot in each barrel.
He'll get slaughtered if he triggers that thing.
And I'm getting edgy, Finley.
And me, if I get a coughing spell, I'm liable to shoot without meaning to.
All right, all right. This is twice you have made a Finley back down. You'll never get a third chance. Let's get out of here.
Matt, when are you going to arrest him?
When I'm ready. Not long.
I hope not. Getting impatient to see that man dead.
I got your message, Marshal. I hope it's important.
It is, Moncrief. How long you been foreman for Big Jack?
15-16 years.
You know him pretty well. Would he be the kind to kill a girl?
No, of course not. Guess he'd kill a man if he got mad enough, but he wouldn't kill no girl, Marshal.
Well, I have proof that he did. A girl and her brother, but it doesn't set right. I'm hoping you can help.
What's your proof, Marshal?
A letter that names Finley as the man. Ruth Davis wrote it before she died.
Ruth Davis.
And this watch chain was found with her belongings. It's engraved on the back.
I know. I was with Big Jack when he bought this chain in Chicago. It was right after his wife died.
Big Jack wore it all the time?
You rode the right hunch, Marshal.
What?
Thorne is your man, just like you figure. He had a yen for the Davis girl, but he kept it quiet. Because he didn't want it known, she throwed him over.
But the watch chain...
Big Jack gave that to Thorne on his 25th birthday. Whole ranch can testify to that.
Hmm. Good. All right, thank you, Moncrief.
You gonna try and arrest Thorne?
Why?
If Big Jack believes Thorne killed that girl, it'll break his heart.
Broke her neck.
If he don't believe it...
Then?
He'll protect Thorne. And, Marshal, there's not enough lawmen in the state of Kansas to make Big Jack give up his son.
You, Marshal.
And John Holliday. Doc, this is Judge Nathan.
Holliday? Oh, yes, I've heard of you.
I've heard of you, too, Judge. Wonder which has heard the worst.
What's that?
Judge, I'm here on business.
Oh, of course. Come in, won't you? In my study here, so we won't be disturbed. What is it, Marshal?
I want you to swear out a warrant for Thorne Finley's arrest. Charge, murder. You sure you want to go with me, Doc?
I'm sure.
All right, hold up your right hand.
No, Matt, you wouldn't make me a lawman.
If you go, you go as my deputy. I'm not letting you make this a private fight.
Yeah, but my friends, if they hear I wore a star... All right, Matt, it's your show.
You swear to uphold and enforce the laws of this community, the state of Kansas, and the United States to the best of your ability as deputy marshal, so help you God.
All of that?
All of that.
I swear...
Here, pin on this badge.
All right, man. You know, I'm feeling this badge is going to cramp my style something terrible.
We better breathe our horses going up through this pass. We still got a good ride ahead.
How far?
Oh, about 10 miles.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Matt? Will they fight?
Well...
Queen's on the other side of the pass behind you. That's being smart, Dylan. Queen will drop you if you touch a gun butt.
You're handy at this bushwhacking, aren't you, Thorne? If Doc...
He's all right. My slug seems to have bounced off his thick skull.
Good.
Yeah, let's pull your teeth. Better you do it. With your left hand, reach down and across slow. Pull your gun out with your fingertips and toss it away.
Nervous?
Just cautious.
Or maybe this queen doesn't exist, huh, Thorne?
Queen! Queen's one of Dad's men, but I pay him extra to work for me. Any more questions?
I guess not. There's my gun.
The rifle next.
I got a penknife in my pants pocket.
You know why Holiday came to Dodge?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you do, or you wouldn't be riding with him. And he's not going to tell any stories to my dad or anyone else.
You can't kill us, you stupid...
Not planning on killing you.
And what have you got planned?
A queen's kind of a magician. He's going to make Holiday just disappear. Folks won't care much about one of his kind.
I would. I'd care so much I'd hang you for it.
No. No, with Holiday gone, it's your word against mine. And you won't be able to prove a thing, Dylan.
You sure of that?
I'm sure. Otherwise, I'd take care of you along with Holiday. Now get out and start walking back to town. It's like I told you. Law can't touch you, Finley.
There was no time for heroics, so I walked. When I reached a turn, I cut back through the rocks, but it was too late. They were gone. And with them, the horses, guns, and Doc Holliday. 2 miles up the road, I found my horse turned loose. And with a mind full of cold hate, I raced on to the Star in a Box. On the front porch of the ranch house was one of Big Jack's men.
Hold it right there.
Out of my way, mister. I'm in no mood to shake hands.
Where are you heading, lawman?
You don't hear well.
Dylan!
Where's Holiday?
How should I know? Get off my ranch.
And where's that prize son of yours?
What?
Trot him out. I want him.
Do you now? What on earth for?
Thorne, put that gun away.
Oh, no. This is just in case the marshal loses his temper.
I've lost it, Junior.
Sure.
Dylan, I've had all I'm going to stand from you.
You just think you have. Where's Holiday, Thorne? Where'd Queen take him?
Holiday? Why, I haven't the faintest idea. Where is Queen, Dad?
Riding fence line, but...
See, Marshal, we don't know where your friend is.
You're under arrest, Thorne.
What's that?
Ask him to show the warrant.
Here. Read it, Finley.
What? Oh, no. No, that's not possible. The judge wouldn't issue a warrant without proof.
He has proof, Thorne.
This is a lie. Thorne couldn't be guilty of murder.
No. Take a look at his face.
Son.
Daddy's trying to frame me. Don't let him get away with this.
No, I won't. I won't. Get out, Dylan.
Man, open your eyes. This is not going to help you.
You heard me. I don't believe you, your warrant, or your proof. I believe my son. So get off this ranch. Get out of the state. You let me see you again, so help me, I'll kill you myself.
Forget me. You're bucking the law. You can't.
I make my own law.
So do I.
Doc Holliday.
You're supposed to be dead. Queen was supposed
Queen's
to...
the one who's dead. I carry a knife in my boot just for men like him.
Thorn, God help me. You are guilty.
He sure is. And if he knows any prayers, he'd better get them over with.
No, Doc. He goes back with us as our prisoner.
You're wrong, Marshal. I'll take care of my son.
Dad. No.
You rotten, lying, murderous.
Please, please don't.
I
Dad.
Should have strangled
Stand
you in the cradle when you were.
Stand away, I'll shoot you. Don't you know?
Finley, look out. I threw myself at Finley and both of us hit the floor, rolling away from Thorne as he raised his gun to fire. Then in the doorway, the blood-stained, terrible figure of Doc Holliday went into action. His pale hands blurred over his holster.
Ruth Thorne!
Ruth?
Sage is ready to leave, Mr. Holliday.
Thanks, Chester.
You sure you want to stay around a while, Doc?
Yeah, we're good friends, Matt, but you're a peace officer. I guess I'm not a very peaceful man.
You could be, Doc.
No, I'm not going to change, and you shouldn't. Law needs men like you. No, if I stayed there, it's too good a chance I might cross you.
Yeah?
Then I'd have to meet you over gun barrels, and it's one thing I'm afraid of. So long, Matt.
Good luck, Doc.
My. I never would have thought Doc Holliday was scared of meeting anyone in a gunfight.
You don't understand, Chester. Doc's afraid because he might beat me.
Yes, that was episode 13, Gunsmoke, titled Doc Holliday. That had an original air date, the 19th of July, 1952. I'm not a big fan of introducing historical figures into fictitious settings, as I stated before the program, but that actually was a pretty good program. I was wondering how they were going to somehow incorporate Doc Holliday into a Gunsmoke, but for those that don't realize, Wyatt Earp was in Dodge City, and Marshall Dillon is actually, that's where he's presides over. Close out this show. The beginning of the show, I played yours truly, Johnny Dollar. So next week I'll follow with the next episode in that series. Again, this is Arthur. You're listening to 91.5 FM.